Today is Thursday, February 7th, 2019. It's 11:16 in the morning. Hi, I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio in downtown foggy Chicago. Listen for me weekdays from 1 to 3.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's so foggy right now, we can barely see in the apartment windows across the way.
It's really a shame.
But we still can't.
It's something to see sometimes.
Well, that's why I brought my binoculars. I'm Eric Zorn, the finally decided columnist for the Chicago Tribune. I run Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays, 3 days a week. Is that cool?
I was going to use as my intro line, a la Eric Zorn, I want to spark joy because everybody's cleaning up their houses, a la Marie Kondo.
Have you watched her show?
I have a little bit.
I don't get it.
It's a thing, Eric.
Well, you know what's happening is that a lot of these secondhand stores and Salvation Armies are being flooded with stuff.
I love that.
Because everybody's getting rid of their stuff.
The stuff that doesn't spark joy.
But we watched a couple, and I really wanted to be moved, and it didn't spark with me.
Well, I watched her show me how to fold shirts, sweaters, and pants, and then put them in drawers. And I've tried that before, and folding your sweaters and lining them up that way works. But her clothes are the size of a teacup. And I'm like, I want to see her do an American male, somebody who's 6'2", 250 pounds,
right,
and fold those neatly and make them stand up and spark joy, because our clothes are different than yours, lady. But we digress.
I think we do digress.
Can you digress if you never start dressing? I mean,
by the way, we do want your questions and comments, your observations and recommendations. Leave a voice message with producer Elif. Details are printed on the page that comes with this podcast. Today, we're going to start in Trump land, fellas, and then we'll go to Wrigleyville, and then we'll head south to City Hall and Streeterville, and then we'll take a left and go to Virginia. Let's start in Trump land. Two things are happening, guys. Democrats in the House are investigating stuff, and we learned that the president is not going to give on his demand for border wall funding. He said so at the State of the Union address. So first, let's score the State of the Union speech. Jerry Falwell Jr. said it was the best State of the Union speech he's seen in his lifetime, delivered by the best president since George Washington. Newt Gingrich said it was so effective and powerful it changed the course of history. Those literally were their words. It sounds like hyperbole on my part. They get to be hyperbolic, but I get to quote them, and that's what they said. I said it's a good thing he's president because now we're not in a major war with North Korea.
If I had not been elected president of the United States, we would right now, in my opinion, be in a major war with North Korea.
Not the little kind, but an all caps major war. Eric, score the president's State of the Union.
I thought it was average in many ways, just sort of sloppily delivered in a he was like low energy. I mean, it didn't seem like it had a lot of fire to it. I really objected to his implication that if you keep investigating him, he's going to just throw more gears into the machinery of government. I thought that was one of the most astonishing things I've heard. I think Jerry Falwell needs to learn some more history, maybe go to a different university than a Liberty University, where he might learn about the great presidents we've had.
The president said there will be no investigation. There could be no legislation if there is investigation.
If there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation.
He had some snappy turns of the phrase there. And I guess that's what you're worried about.
I think it's really stupid and wrong to say that this is part of the oversight job that Democrats have in Congress, and I'm glad they're doing it. And for him to suggest that he's going to take some sort of other action to stop the normal course of legislation is really poisonous. I was also struck by his invocation of the abortion issue, which I think was probably the most vivid bringing up of that issue that I can remember in a State of the Union speech. And it suggests to me that he may be realizing that immigration is not working very well as a wedge issue for him anymore, that it's not motivating people. So he's going to be using late term, so-called partial birth abortions to get his base riled up. That was a suggestion that I picked up from that.
Well, he talked to the National Prayer Breakfast today and certainly brought up abortion there.
Yeah, I think that's his new thing. I think he's going to pivot a little bit away from immigration.
It was a big applause line. I mean, he knew the inauguration or the immigration stuff might be received with you know, tepidly, but he knew that the Republicans in the House would jump to their feet and roar their approval at that language, particularly since he castigated the Virginia governor for the things he said about that. So it was kind of a fresh topic for them. But I was just surprised at a lot of the things that weren't covered, right? Like climate change wasn't covered. Did you hear much about education? The State of the Union involves things like the economy and taxes. Maybe this is too much to ask from a State of the Union, right? It's not an honest assessment. It's a chance for the president to crow and his party to
cheer.
Yeah,
he's going to make his case, not the country's case.
Okay, but I mean, I think there were whole topics that were missing, though, like the environment and the climate.
Yeah, but I think you're thinking that he has to go down the list. Like, and in mathematics, we're doing this, and in science, we're doing this. I don't think that's it.
I was thinking we'd get more of that.
Right.
Well, it was a campaign speech, basically. This is a kickoff campaign speech for 2020.
Except that he doesn't do those kind of scripted speeches well. We all know he's great in an arena, but I think when he's reading that stuff, you described it as low energy. The last 2 minutes of that speech were this flowery sort of aspirational jargon that sounded so clunky coming out of him.
We do the incredible. We defy the impossible. We conquer the unknown. This is the time to search for the tallest summit and set our sights on the brightest star.
And maybe Newt Gingrich was in tears when he heard it, but I just thought, when is this thing going to end? This doesn't even sound like you. There's no enthusiasm.
That ending was pretty good. But again, you're right. It was, I mean, in terms of like poetry, that could have come from any president at any
time. Did you see
what
Ann Coulter said about it? She said, she quoted him, the golden beaches of California. She said, President Trump, fire your speechwriter. This is the worst speech ever. Look, you're writing a speech for somebody. That is not a speech delivered with credibility by Donald Trump.
Well, look, the audience was up. I think the numbers were up 10% from the year before. The polling showed, I think it was 60% of people thought it was a good speech. 60% is a pretty good number in the country.
It is. Patty Vasquez just strolled in. Hi, Patty Vasquez.
Hello.
Hi, Patty Vasquez.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's a little foggy out.
Oh, my God.
Are you blaming the fog?
Yes.
You can. This fog is as fantastically thick as we've ever seen it.
It's only high up here, though. It's better down there, right?
How are you, Patty? Thanks
I'm
for
well.
Coming in.
Thank you for having me.
You out of breath?
No, I'm still recovering from the President's State of the Union address.
What's your grade?
There was so much, I stood up a lot and I was applauding.
You're just worn out.
Were you wearing white in your living room?
I actually thought about wearing my white suit to work, but I wanted to wear a baseball hat. None of it really went together.
Was that a good idea?
Yeah,
why not?
Sure.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I had much more fun Tuesday night watching the Marquette St. John's basketball game, and my team lost.
So there you go.
So I tuned in for the end of it, though, and I saw. And when I first saw that block of white, I thought, that's a little gimmicky, but yeah, maybe not. Maybe it was a good idea.
More gimmicky than singing happy birthday to one of the guests?
I thought we were at Applebee's. I was like, are they going to start clapping and bring our cake?
I guess this is what it is now. Mm-hmm. This State of the Union thing is just really bad theater.
I feel like this is the follow-up to the Super Bowl where everyone bitches about everything they saw. And
a little bit.
I'd like to resist that, but I can't help but feel, and this is for every president, and now members of Congress are using their ticket to make arguments, political points. I just feel that those people who are asked to stand up and bear themselves are just being used.
Oh, that was
survivors of murder,
even if cancer.
Even if they ask to be there, it's just to me. I can't stand it.
The little boy with the last name Trump who fell asleep.
Yeah,
I would love it.
I mean, you know, I think it would be really. It would land poorly if Nancy Pelosi were to have just like said, "Hey, look, we'll take it in writing from now on from you."
I think that should be considered.
But So let me say this. I hope that there's a Democratic president and a Republican speaker, that the Republican speaker says we're not going to do this anymore. I would love to see the end of this. And it's not a partisan view on my part. I think it's a ridiculous spectacle. I hate that we have to watch it. I hate that we have to talk about it. It's just basically a long, boring laundry list speech with some moments in it that get you angry.
All right, what was the takeaway moment?
Trump does it every day with his tweets.
What was the signature moment of this? I have an answer, but is there anything that really stood out to you?
For me, it was talking about maternity and paternity leave and then pivoting directly to late-term abortions, which he completely misrepresented as the again, going back to ripping, you know, babies out of wombs after they can survive, and when it's completely a lie and a fallacy to continue to say that New York and Virginia have passed these laws when we know that these are not choices made easily by women and doctors.
Do you think Nancy Pelosi's clapping at the president was... fill in that blank.
It was the best she could do. And I mean, like, you know, she didn't yell at him. She refrained from making a lot of eye rolling, and she had a puckered, you know, face for quite a bit of it. And I think that was, you know, the nice sign off.
I'm right. You're right, Eric. I'm done with it. I used to love it. I used to love the pomp and circumstance. I used to love to try to figure out who wasn't there. But the more I hear the rehashing and the...
When did you stop loving it?
About 30 seconds ago. I mean, no, I didn't watch much of it last night. It was one of the first time ever. And, you know, if you step back, it is ridiculous anymore.
It is. For the reasons you didn't watch it, you shouldn't have watched
right.
it.
Right.
But so up until Trump, you liked it? Or, I mean...
Oh, even during... I mean, I've always thought it was a great sort of American institution, a
right.
great moment of... We don't have much pageantry in our government. And this is one of the few occasions of pageantry. But it's become a caricature of itself. I don't care who Congresswoman Ocasio brings as her guest to the House. I just don't give a damn.
Okay.
And they're all using their tickets to do that. It's just exhausting.
Let's do Joe Ricketts. Ready?
Yes.
Joe Ricketts, the patriarch of the Cubs organization, essentially, certainly of the Ricketts family. He's no longer in a meaningful capacity for the Cubs, right? He's not the owner of the team. He's not the manager of the team. He's not the president or CEO of the team. But the team is in Ricketts' hands because he helped finance it to begin with. Anyway, Joe Ricketts insists that it was wrong to judge him by his years of writing and laughing and talking about Muslims and blacks and Hispanics in disparaging ways. A trove of email were posted on a website called Splinter News. And he now says, I've said things that don't reflect my value systems. I believe that bigoted ideas are wrong. That's not a good sentence. If you don't see that bigoted ideas and the word wrong are redundant concepts, then your value system is askew. But he said, I strongly believe that bigoted ideas are wrong. Dude, what are you talking about?
How strongly?
And by the way, if we have a lifetime of you saying bigoted, mean-spirited, awful things, I think we do get to decide that is your value system. And if it's not, what's the point of a value system?
It's horrible. Those emails were just awful. Did you read through them all?
I read every one of them.
Oh, my
really?
God.
I read the whole thing.
Hold on, give me a minute.
You will need it.
Wasn't he a birther? Wasn't he one of the early
yes.
birthers?
Yeah, when Trump was coming out with the birther thing, he was giving money to Trump.
Am I the only person who feels a little bit weird about the idea that we don't have any idea how they got this email, mm-hmm. but it's clearly hacked, stolen
now,
material?
No, they said, we traded correspondence on my show with the woman that wrote that article for Splinter News. She said that it was not hacked. It was not stolen.
It has to be stolen. It's private information. I mean,
multiple people were on those
right.
chains, and somebody I'm believing that somebody gave it to her
because he had also forwarded them and didn't, you know,
to a lot of people.
And did anybody that was on that thread? Did anybody say, "Hey, this is reprehensible. Hey, you guys, we need to knock this off."
His son did at one point. Peter said, "Dad, you ought to go to Snopes. What you're saying about this one incident has been debunked," and he said...
But your racist jokes are hilarious. I mean, come on.
What are you going to do? It's not fair to hold the Cubs accountable, and you can't do anything to Joe Ricketts, so...
I don't know. Does he still run Ameritrade, or, I mean...
No, I don't think he does.
I don't know if he does or not.
I mean, there's
right.
where you
could divest
your
yourself
action,
of
right.
his company.
There's something about... There's sort of a Cubs pattern here, right? With you know, Chapman, Rollis Chapman, and they had him on, and then they were they kind of gave short shrift to
Addison Russell.
And then it was Dale Murphy and his homophobic stuff. I mean, it's like sort of this insensitivity about the Cubs. And then on top of that, and this is unrelated to this totally, but it's changing my feelings about the Cubs. They're going to be doing this Cubs cable TV network. We're going to have to buy
right.
the Cubs as a special cable package. And I'm just like, come on, I'm getting a little grossed out by this franchise.
Daniel Murphy. Just so
Daniel Murphy, okay. Who's Dale Murphy?
He was a great player for the Braves.
Okay.
Somebody said this week, though, they said, you know, the Cubs aren't lovable anymore. You know, they're winners, and that's good, but they sure aren't lovable like they used to be. And I don't know that it's all fair. If Murphy has feelings about the gay lifestyle that are different than my own, I don't think it's fair to judge the organization by that. I don't want my teams to have a litmus test for guys who they'll hire for their athleticism.
Sure.
Go get the best athletes, win the games. I don't need to know that other stuff. And Joe Ricketts, I don't think, is a fair reflection on the organization. Tom said, that's not us.
But isn't he taking over fundraising for President Trump, which many people consider to be someone who is not.
Well, then
racially...
don't like Ricketts and don't like Trump. But I mean, we live in Chicago.
Not Tom Ricketts. Not
which Ricketts is
Joe's the dad, the guy right. we're talking about. Tom is the CEO of the team now.
Right. Well, I had decided one of the reasons I was rooting against the Patriots in the Super Bowl was that their owner was so close to Trump
and their quarterback
was close to Trump. And then somebody pointed out to me that the L.A. Rams owner also had donated a bunch of money to Trump and. It's like when you're dealing with people at that level, they're probably going to be major Republican donors.
Sure. And they've probably given to Ball, but they gave money to the Clintons, too. I mean, Eric, this is not helpful. This is not instructive.
Right. But it's an accumulation of things. Like Chapman, the whole thing, the domestic violence thing with Chapman, the relief pitcher they brought in. And it was like, and it seems like there's more of a pattern here to the Cubs and their kind of ethical compass not being pointed in the right direction that gives me pause about it. I don't know if it's something that I could like say, okay, now I'm going to root for the White Sox.
Well, that was one of the options on our news click. You had four options, go to the game, don't go to the game. Just go to the Sox games. 9% said, okay, I'll go to the Sox games now.
Well, those 9%.
Yeah,
I can't do it.
Those 9% are getting a bargain. They're being entertained and parking's great. So,
yeah, and the food's good.
Who's smart?
Yes.
On the south
beautiful
side.
Park.
Team is not going to be very good, unfortunately.
I don't think you can condemn a team for the chairman's dad,
I agree.
He put up the money, sounds like, right? He put up some really money for it.
Yeah.
I just feel like...
About half a bill.
Doesn't it sort of make you in some ways question the whole nature of sports fandom? Like, what are you a fan of? Are you just a fan of the laundry?
You mean the jerseys? I'm sorry. I was just thinking of big piles of sweaty clothes.
Yeah, well, I mean,
what are you,
I mean,
a mom?
I gotta wash that.
Is there something more to your fandom? You're loyal to this organization?
Well, I think it's also history. It's those memories that you have of going to the park, I think, is deeply tied to that.
And in some ways it's fun. I mean, I grew up in the Detroit area. I rooted for the Tigers when I was a kid, and I rooted for Tigers for the first few years when I got here. Then I realized that wasn't much fun anymore because I...
you were alone.
Well, no, it wasn't. I mean, they were actually good. Really good in '84, but
the team called the Cubs was in the playoffs that year. Would have been crushed by the Tigers. They lost to San Diego, but
with the ball going through the legs. Yeah, but I remember I transferred my allegiance because it was convenient. Like the games were on TV here, and it was nice. And people were talking about the team, and so sports fandom. And then suddenly you've got these other elements coming into it that make you feel like, oh no, I don't know if I want to like. And it's not that I would necessarily give up on the team, but I might like go to fewer games or watch fewer games or just like sort of pull back the way a lot of people have pulled back from football.
Well, another way to look at it is that Tom Ricketts is the current pope, but the church lasts forever. There have been several.
That's pretty good, Steve.
Wow.
It's silly.
I need to pause and think about that.
But look, when I became a diehard Cub fan, there were very different owners. It was Mr. Wrigley. Then it went to the Tribune Company. Then it went, so there will be different sort of holders of this institution.
Okay, Scott Stannis has strolled into our studio.
Yeah.
He's been busy all day today. We are about 15 minutes into this pod, so I'm going to catch you up. Ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Oh, boy.
Give me 10 seconds on State of the Union Address.
It was a good speech. I thought I had a couple of good moments.
Okay, nobody said that while you were gone, so give me one good thing or two.
When he mentioned the historic number of women in the Congress, and they erupted and chanted USA, that was a good moment, I think.
I'm sorry.
I believe she was laughing at you.
No, she's laughing
it's
with
a rally
me. Totally
moment.
Laughing
Why
with
would
me.
You, chanting USA, be... It's like,
I hate the chanting USA.
Well, I hate the standing USA. Up and sitting down. I think it's juvenile. But, no, I'm saying when the women stood up and that chant went up with them, how great this country is and how we've come this far. The second part was singing Happy Birthday to an 81-year-old Holocaust survivor.
Well, I was happy for him, but I just thought, what bad theater all of this.
Oh, no. It's juvenile. It's terrible. Eric and I agree on very few things. On this, we agree they should get rid of it and just do what George Washington did, is send a note.
And Bertrand's on the team.
I'm a convert now. I think you're right, Scott. And I used to love
it. That was longer than 10 seconds.
You were an Atlanta Braves fan. Do you want to say about Joe Ricketts and the...
I'm a Padres fan. I grew up, to answer your question about laundry.
I know.
And, the Padres have been to this World Series twice and won one game. So, but I still start...
Eight opportunities and, yes. And one win.
The Ricketts thing, I mean, he apologized for it, firstly. At what point... I mean, it's a bigger issue. At what point do you say, and the governor of Virginia did not say this. He did not apologize. He said, well, I'm really sorry. And they said, oh, wait, by the way, it wasn't me.
At what point do we have let him apologize?
At what point
do we offer forgiveness? Are you asking that about Joe Ricketts? He said that stuff recently. He didn't say this when he was 25. He said it when he was 65.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sorry. I think this is the well-formed thoughts and humor of a bigot, and he doesn't get okay. the 40 years have passed.
But what do you do with it? I mean, okay, you're right. He's a bigot. He's a right-wing nut job who is a bigot. I don't know.
And who's a billionaire who finances political campaigns.
Okay, mm-hmm. So, okay, I'm with you on all that. But, I mean, I think to make the transference to the Cubs.
I'm not saying that, yeah. Steve, but Scott seems to be throwing him a bone here, and I don't know
I'm just saying that. I know you guys were talking about Virginia. And
We haven't gotten there.
Well, then I'll hold my powder.
But that's what we're doing now. I mean, that's all of our energy is on finding transgression, whether recent or far in the past, and then deciding our scale of justice.
Well, you can't do anything about Ricketts, but I think his is more, he's more culpable for his thoughts today.
I agree.
And it's much worse. I mean, it is overtly racist and bigoted. And, you know, well, anyway, are we going to talk about Virginia yet, or are we still on Ricketts?
Well, here, somebody who's a billionaire and created this company, you also have to wonder how it affected the way he employed people going back decades. Well, right? And the impact it's had on, this is really the bigger picture, right? Are we going to go back and look at people's history and go, oh, well, now we're going to dislike them or dislike the team?
Very few Muslim players on the Cubs.
Let's
over
go
years.
Back.
Well,
how
but I mean, what about at Ameritrade?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'd like to see every politician who has taken a donation from Tom Ricketts.
Joe Ricketts.
Joe is the bad guy.
Todd, by the way, it's Todd is the brother.
Todd's the brother that owns it.
Fundraising.
And the brother, what's the
name? One's the brother in Nebraska.
Brother in Nebraska. Anyway,
they're like the Bushes.
And then they've got this sister Laura who's like. Kind of great.
Can you
right?
imagine Thanksgiving at their house?
Oh, man. And especially now. But what I'm saying is, why don't politicians who took donations from Joe have to be asked to return it? All these politicians in Chicago, whoever right. like spoke to Danny Solis, have to give all the money back because he might be in trouble. And Joe Ricketts is out there with his poisonous crap.
That's a good point. And
Scott, what do you think of the governor of Virginia?
Well, I think he should step down. I think he seems confused about whether or not he wore blackface.
That same year, I did participate in a dance contest in which I darkened my face as part of a Michael Jackson costume. It is because my memory of that episode is so vivid that I truly do not believe I am in the picture in my yearbook.
I guarantee you, I'd remember. He chose the photograph to run on his page.
He said he
yearbook.
Didn't. And he didn't.
Then he apologized.
Then
he apologized before he didn't remember it wasn't him.
That photo and the racist and offensive attitudes it represents does not reflect that person I am today. I am deeply sorry. I accept responsibility for my past actions, and I am ready to do the hard work of regaining your trust.
So what would you expect? You'd expect someone to say, listen, I mean, I'm of that age, and I'm sure someone in my school did something that stupid, but it wasn't me, happily. If you come out and say, listen, that was a different time, and I regret that, it makes me ache now that this, and I'm going to do everything I can to make things right and to correct what the problems that led to that.
It was 1984. It was different times. I mean, we had to, are we going to come to terms with the fact of how racist we are? And people in Virginia are going, yeah, I remember dressing up in blackface. And yeah, whenever we wanted to dress up as the Pointer Sisters or Michael Jackson.
Wait a minute, what about that?
But that's what my friends who live in Virginia are like, yeah, that's what it was like growing up in Virginia.
And what do you think about that?
I think that we need to come to terms with how racist this country is instead of going instance by instance.
Well, was it racist then to do that?
It was, but
it was racist in the early 1980s. To
don't
dress
you think?
Up in blackface.
Of course.
I think
that they thought it was funny, but at the expense of others.
But when you're committing a racist act, it has to be like, I think, an overtly hostile act toward another race. I categorize this as obliviousness. I don't think that these people who dress, I mean, I think if you dress up and you make fun of black people when you do it, that's a racist act. If you're dressing up to be the Pointer Sisters or Fat Albert or Michael Jackson for a contest, that was oblivious. That was people who just didn't understand. Because I don't think that these people, you can necessarily assume that they meant to cause offense. That they thought, I'm going to do this. Okay. Screw those black people. I'm going to dress like this anyway. I think they didn't get it.
So.
And it was 35 years ago.
So the national holiday for Martin Luther King's birthday was passed in 1982 against the wishes of President Reagan. I mean, he eventually had to sign it. So Virginia, in response, decided to also just lump in Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee.
That's a different thing.
But it isn't, though, because it is to say that, well, forget this leader who is, obviously the symbol of, justice for African-American population. We're going to go ahead and lump this in with our Confederate heroes. I think it is reflective of the 1980s in Virginia.
This pains me. I talked to Eric about it before. I didn't necessarily want to have this conversation. But when I was in middle school, I was in a play portraying an African-American character. And my school, my teacher who wrote the play, the director of the play, had the idea of putting me in blackface. And so I did. So what does that mean about me, Patty? Here it is 40 years later. What does it mean?
That the person who was supposed to be giving you a guidance, that was supposed to be somebody who was an influence on you, led you the wrong way. I don't think that necessarily...
But I think that
you're talking about Illinois? Are you talking
about... Yeah.
Yeah. And when I was in sixth grade, we had a teacher who was let us sing Epton, Epton, He's Our Man, because we don't want no African. Yes, Chicago is racist,
but that's
too.
Very different. I'm sorry. That's different. I think that's overtly racist.
Right.
Yes. What Eric is saying is there was a time misguided absolutely by today's standards, absolutely wrong, but there was a time then when the people who were doing it didn't occur to them that it might have been offensive.
And it is.
And
it
if
is
we're going to start sinking people because of that, I think it's a little scary.
I agree with that. What I'm saying is we shouldn't have to. I'm saying I'm not going to judge you based on the fact that.
But you are judging me by judging others.
Well, she's judging
I'm saying
the entire
culture of the fact that we won't address how many of these instances of whether it's blackface in 1980s or teacher or my teacher.
Right.
Right. We are not coming to terms.
But then do this,
we are
guys.
Sacrificing
Hold
people on.
On
an individual basis.
So then what do you do with Northam today?
He's handling it poorly.
He's handling it terribly.
He definitely handled it poorly. Although his first response, I thought, was appropriate. He came out that Friday and said, my God, this is terrible. He did apologize for it then. And then I don't know what happened or what his communications people did. But he seems to say, wait a minute. On second thought, as I think about this, this wasn't me. And then that news conference was just a complete car crash. So, it's like he's handled it poorly. He's now apparently gone into some sort of seclusion because he hasn't made any public statements or appearances. You know, I think that he needs to wait this out and see if maybe once all the heat dies down, he can make apologies and figure out a way forward here. He may not be able to. There's this additional complication we've got with the lieutenant governor.
How many,
who is plausibly accused of sexual assault in 2004.
And the attorney general.
Yeah. And now the attorney general, who is the next one in line, says, when I was an undergraduate, when I was 19, I think he said, he dressed and blackened his face to play a rapper at a party. And I think that there's a difference between when you're talking about, little Steve Bertrand in middle school, being a middle school kid, being a 19-year-old college, sophomore probably at that point, and then being a 25-year-old. I mean, there's all kinds of differences in these instances. I don't think that we can necessarily say that a 19-year-old who one time dressed up as a rap star or a pop star, forget who he dressed up as, 40 years ago now or whatever it is, therefore has to quit his job as attorney general. That's an absurd standard.
But that's where we are right now. We're trying to figure out where that scale is.
Meanwhile, you've got, as you point out, this state, Virginia, that every year celebrates Robert E. Lee and the Confederacy in a way that is actively painful to African Americans. They are defending things, and they're also this whole Republican Party that wants to diminish the voter, right of
make it harder
ballot
to vote,
access for African Americans. I mean, this is the scale here. The scope is just preposterous to me.
That's what I mean. Like, these are instances that we can address, but it's the bigger picture that I think we're struggling with and can't come to terms with it. Disenfranchising Black voters. Again, you mentioned the Robert E. Lee. I mean, the statues to Confederate soldiers. All these things. We don't want to come to terms with it. By the way, I bet you Megyn Kelly's ticked off. this was her point, wasn't it? Was that people used to dress up in blackface.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's fine. She got, $38 million to go away? So.
Remember Ted Danson got in all kinds of hot water when he was dating Whoopi Goldberg. He appeared in blackface.
The Friars Club,
I think. Friars Roast.
And I would like to go back
now
to 19...
Whatever happened to him anyway?
Ted Danson, yeah.
I know.
He'll be known as one of the best TV actors of our lives, I think.
Good place.
I'd like to be able to go back to 1982 and see how this topic was considered or discussed.
I actually did that. I went and looked in the news archives to see if it was... Because I don't remember even talking about blackface back then.
No.
Really?
No, I don't.
Oh, I can remember it in high school thinking, no.
I don't even remember stories about it. I mean, I looked, there were a couple, but not very many. And I looked, the Tribune almost had no mention of it.
So, Scott,
at all.
Your recollection is in 1984, 82, this was like a verboten sort of thing.
Yeah, I went to high school in the 70s, and I can remember, no, you just don't do it.
I'd like to know how many blacks were in the acting class or the fraternity party. I wonder how many blacks were in the audience or participating.
Great point. Great
Would you have done that if you were in the company of people who are African American? I think that's telling. You know what I think, guys, is that we are hitting, a 2-pound penny with a 10-pound hammer or something like that, in the case of the governor, the attorney general in Virginia, but too bad. It's not like you have the cure to cancer, and if we lose your stewardship, we'll be screwed. It may be an unfair punishment to you, but that's okay. You know, the state will be fine. I think the problem with the governor of Virginia isn't whether or not he was in the hood or the blackface. It is. That's an issue. But it's that he's handling this so badly.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I also, but for me, it's like, how did he get this far with that photo there? I mean, that nobody ever knew.
Because I can say, coming from the South, living in the South, still having a home in the South, I was speaking to a rural high school one time, and I had done a cartoon because the KKK was marching downtown Birmingham, and I was, you know, against this. But a kid came up to me, and very sincerely and very sweetly, really, said, why'd you make fun of the KKK? And I had to explain to him, because they're, you know, bad.
Yeah.
But that had not occurred to him. He'd grown up, and the culture down there continues to be.
What year was that?
Oh, golly, this was in the late 90s, early 2000s.
I've heard from a lot of people who say, well, why didn't he front this? When he ran for office, why didn't he tell people about this? My theory is that he has not given a thought to this.
No, that's my point. That's my point, is that down there, this wouldn't be a thing.
Or that he wasn't even aware that that was in his yearbook.
Yeah.
That he didn't even know.
By the way, do you know that they stopped publication of the yearbook, I believe, in 2013 because one of the students was posing in Confederate gear? I mean, this is something that they allowed to continue. The fact that book was even published in 1984.
I'm watching the clock. Let's talk about the Chicago City Hall situation.
Okay.
Where do we even begin? But the Solis tapes continue to pay dividends.
Yeah.
If nothing else, it's an insight into how business and government are run in the city of
Chicago.
But
do you really want to think about him and Viagra?
Oh.
Seriously.
The massage parlors?
Well, that was last week's news. You know, the Sun-Times, and I haven't seen the Tribune's coverage of this today. I'm sure they've got it as well, but it's the story of another developer, and he wanted to, you know, you need the approval of the alderman. The alderman calls the developer and says, hey, I've got my, Danny Solis says, taste of the 25th fundraiser coming up, and I'd sure appreciate your support. And he says, don't you worry, I'll be supporting you. And by the way, my brother-in-law could use a job, and he's really qualified. Brother-in-law never got the job, but it's just so fascinating to me to see how business gets done.
How are we shocked by this? How, in the name of everything that's holy, are we here in Chicago, and all of a sudden people are like, you know, Claude Rains in Casablanca? I'm shocked.
I know.
There's corruption in Chicago.
Well, I was saying just last week that this was a really lousy time for this scandal to be breaking over us, because it is still evolving, and we don't know the connection that some of these mayoral candidates have. We have less than 3 weeks to the election. We don't know what's going to come out on these tapes after the election and who we're going to elect. On the other hand, the fact that this has that this whole idea of how we are governed, how aldermanic privilege has infected the way this city has run for so long, is breaking over us right now, has forced a lot of the candidates into very strong declarations against aldermanic privileges. Has taken this issue that was kind of a nerdy thing. People like, you know, it's like wasn't the average people weren't really aware of. It's front and center now. The WGN debate, the very first answer that the very first candidate gave last night, the very first thing he said, it was Gary Chico, was, I'm getting rid of aldermanic privilege. That was the first thing in that debate. And I think that tells you that this, now we've got some momentum to change the way business is done in City Hill. And it may be that Chicago is ready for reform.
When I first got here, I swear, I was aghast at this, and had people at the Tribune, people in the city, all of whom were just like, oh, Scott, it's just, no one cares. It's okay. No one cares. Well, guess what? I mean, this is now it's a thing. And it's aggravating when you've been wailing against it for a decade and people all of a sudden wake up and go, oh, wait a minute, this is a thing?
Everything's complicated right now.
It's complicated right now, but I once in a while I flash to that scene in the movie Lincoln with Daniel Day-Lewis where they're talking, and they're bartering, right? They're trading, they're offering jobs for votes in order to pass The Emancipation Proclamation.
I believe. The 13th Amendment.
That's right, 13th Amendment. And I think that, you know, bartering and making these deals has always been part of politics. But, you know, the hubris, I think, is the part that gets away from them. There's no line. It seems as though maybe it's kind of like when we talk about, you know, the mafia or something, like there's always lines, there are always rules, you know, and you kind of just accept that it's there. And I think that's where we are with politics. We're like, yeah, this is how they do business. I've lived here my entire life. My dad knew people. You know, my dad was indicted. I think we've talked about this before. Sure, we'll talk about it off the air someday. Maybe I'll talk about it on the air, for taking bribery at the Secretary of State. And that was the way I grew up, was knowing who you knew in the neighborhood, who you could get a job with. And I think it's, you know, it's good that it's under the light of day that we're talking about it, but I don't know how much will change.
Yeah, and I guess we shouldn't be shocked, but it's still shocking to read, isn't it? I mean, isn't the transparency, fascinating is the wrong word, but it's just so interesting to me to see this play out. And I think that's going to be the story of the year.
And of course, we've had scandal after scandal going way back, and nothing has really changed. This time, however, the thing that makes it potentially different is that you have these mayoral candidates who are, for the most part, really coming out strongly against this tradition.
Yeah.
And perhaps we can hold their feet to the fire.
It is 5 minutes before the top of the hour. This studio is going to be used at the top of the hour.
Okay.
And the next show featuring Steve Bertrand is about to roll in.
He's a genius.
Let's all do 10 seconds of recommendation if we can. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I went through a bookshelf and came across an old book I had not read called Reading the Fights. It's edited by Joyce Carol Oates and Daniel Halpern, and it just reminds you of how great sports writing can be.
There's a great Ward by Ward podcast called Backroom Deals with Ben Jarafsky and Maya Dukmusova at The Reader, and they're going through each of the aldermanic races.
Cool.
And talking. It's very short, so it doesn't compete with this podcast, but they're very good.
You must go see The Woman in Black. This Fog is perfect. It's this really scary play running at the Royal George Theater through February 17th, and the two men that are in this, Wesley Brown and Bradley Armacost, are outstanding, so please go see that.
Bertrand just walked into the studio. Thank you, Patty. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Elif. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.